Okay, I'm calling the regular meeting of the Bolton Planning and Zoning Commission to order at 7:30 p.m. And I'm going to appoint Diane D'Annunzio for Jim Cropley. And I'm going to appoint Kwan Gordon or Arlene Fiano. Okay, approval of minutes. Are there any additions or corrections?
No, but I will go ahead and make a motion to go ahead and approve the P&Z meeting minutes from October 8th, 2025 at 7:30.
Can I ask that?
Motion, Kwan Gordon. Second, Diane D'Annunzio. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye,
Aye.
and chair votes aye.
So we have six, right?
Fine.
One, five. Seven,
One,
what?
two, three, four, five. Sorry. So
500.
oh, 0-0. Okay, gotcha. Thank you. Sorry.
Okay, residents forum.
I'm sorry, I'm having a problem with my camera. I'm here. I just want to let you know.
Okay. And the chairs aren't saying anything, so we'll move on to staff reports.
Met with some residents about doing lot line reconfiguration on their property. There has been foreclosure action on 1225 Boston Turnpike and 1230, I believe, is the across the street property. And so we have been in discussion with the person who will be assuming the property, and discussing the kinds of things they could do if they either wanted to do them selves, or if they wanted to sell the property, they want to be sure that they're not advertising it as something it can't be done. So we've been meeting with them.
Is there a business on that?
Excuse me?
Is there a business on that property?
Well, one side is the farm stuff that Mr. Lotiga owns, and the other side is vacant.
Okay, thank you.
And attended a 2-day planning conference among other conferences and meetings over the last couple of months. Getting ready to do the annual report, Tom, which once I'm done, I'll send over to you for review.
Okay.
And at our next meeting, we'll be looking at budget. We'll have a new commission members at that time, and be electing officers and that sort of thing. That's all I got for right now.
Hey, Patrice, I have a follow-up question on the two properties. You said one was 1225 Boston Turnpike. What was the second property?
I believe it's 1230 in Quantum looking right now because I have the
Okay.
here. It's across the street. Hang on a second. Let's see where I.
You also said it was foreclosed. Do you know what bank or what lender owns the property
It's
now?
not a lender. He's actually, I believe, a private individual.
Oh, okay.
And hang on one second here. And I believe he assumes the property at the end of November. That they have to give it so much time between the time of the action. I think it's 6 months or something. So this began in May, I guess. So it's one. Nope, not there. I don't know. Did you have any other questions, Juan? Juan?
I guess how's the overall condition of the property? Is it in a distressed state, or is it being kept up from, a visual appealing inspection.
No, it's the well, the vacant property's fine, and the other side, they've kept it up pretty well. It is 1230 Boston Turnpike and 1225.
Okay, thank you.
Mike, did you have anything to report?
Yeah, so as Patrice mentioned, we had met with a couple of property owners, I guess, and also Patrice, did you talk about CROG, or are you waiting until you have more feedback from
No,
them?
I didn't, Mike. I didn't. If you wanna go ahead.
So Patrice had submitted, or I guess CROG had solicited projects or parcels for a sort of a, I don't know if you'd call it like a pilot or a mock development analysis or evaluation, where they kind of take a property that's selected and they look at it from a market standpoint. They look at the physical characteristics, the zoning regulations. They do a sort of a top to bottom analysis and assessment of the property to determine, how it might support some type of housing project or development. So the one of the parcels in town, I'm forgetting the address,
It's the Cider Mill property.
Cider Mill property, was selected. So we met with them to kind of go over the history, and they expect that they'll have their first round of deliverables, I think, in December. So it'll be interesting to see what they come back with, and we've met with the property owner a couple of times as well. So, there may be an opportunity for that to dovetail and push them into gaining a little bit more momentum to do something. The other thing that I isn't really, I guess, notable from a staff report perspective, is that I guess about an hour ago, the replacement bill for 5002 passed the House. So that is part of the, I think we're in day three of the special session. And so 5002 was the bill that proposed to create fair share housing numbers that would be established for each town and put sort of benchmarks together for towns to actually plan and create those units. So that bill was passed and then vetoed by the governor. And there is a 100-page bill that was proposed in the special session and was voted on today in the House. And so I'm just digging through it. There's an OLR sort of analysis that was just put out that talks about each section. They did move away from some of the stronger components of the original bill, but there's still housing growth planning. There's a replacement to the municipal affordable housing plan requirement. There's a lot of tying additional grant funding to towns taking action on housing and changing the limits to when someone's out when a town is eligible for a moratorium. They are allowing districts to be created and allowing commissions to issue waivers and to write in all kinds of flexibility and sort of just kind of throw the whole book out the window. So that is something that we're going to be hearing more than we want to about for the next probably month or two.
Sounds like too, it's all kind of going through the regional cog, right, Mike?
Yeah, so it sounds like towns can create a housing growth plan, or they can opt in to one that would be created regionally. It's a little bit unclear about what the requirement would be if the town didn't go to do that locally, but it looks like it also is creating a council on housing development, which is going to be tasked with reviewing whether towns actually comply with the state POCD and will be responsible for the administration of certain grants and deciding if towns are actually compliant and meeting the criteria. So I think rather than throw create a stick like we hear about often. They're sort of saying, we're not going to make you do it, but we'll just stop giving you any funding if you don't.
So we don't get a carrot either.
I mean, I've skimmed it. It looks like there's, I don't know, 53 sections, and I don't see anything that is, there's no incentives. It doesn't look like there's anything that you're not creating new programs or, you know, anything.
It also looked like the only real, there's something for towns or municipalities that are over 15,000 people. So we don't fall into there. So
yeah, sort that, of avoid they're that. Required to establish a fair rent commission.
Right.
At the 15,000.
I have a question. Oh, sure. Mike, are you still doing?
Nope, I'm done rambling.
No. Let me ramble. This is going to sound odd, but back in about 1990, we were seriously considering affordable housing for seniors, and we had no housing established for seniors, and it was very popular back then. Things were going up that had already been built in Andover and in Coventry, and there was lots of involvement with nonprofits. And so Bolton typically got on board too late. It was all shutting down around that time, and we had not been able to come up with a suitable piece of land. But I did a survey. I was on that committee, and I did a survey simply by calling about town to see what kind of rentals were available, and almost every single rental unit in this town is a single bedroom. And I'm not aware of any big change in that. All of it, so that is the market in this town, are one bedroom rentals. So one of the things that I wonder is that Tom and I were discussing it. He said one of the reasons that was probably so was because a single bedroom rental is a surefire rental. It's good for business. In other words, they're the kind of things that you can pretty much depend on will be fully rented out. Whereas when you get into the multiple bedrooms, that will start to stymie you. Is there any kind of study or that you're aware of about the importance of multi-bedroom rentals regarding affordable housing?
I'm not sure that there's anything specific to that. I think that, 30 plus years ago, the compilation of the average family where people lived and when they retired and I think that probably was the case. Of the few housing developers that, I've talked to or heard from, a lot of them, see an interest in two or three bedrooms because everybody wants a study. Everybody has a grandparent or a grandkid that comes for the weekend. You know, things are a little bit more abstract than they were 30 years ago. And we also have a lot of extra crap that we have to put somewhere, which is why everybody's trying to put up self-storage. I know that there's an age-restricted housing development in Essex that we toured a couple of years ago as part of a training housing something or other, and he was adamant that if he could do it all over again, he would have done no one bedrooms and would have done only twos and threes because his tenants in the ones are always trying to find bigger units. So I think that, nowadays, because the way the family has sort of split up and how things look, they're looking for better, different alternatives.
Is there any restriction on those properties at 1225 and 1230 Boston Turnpike that would disallow the building of housing?
Patrice and I were talking about this before. The 1225 is limited because it's got existing uses. And so it's going to have to be cognizant of whatever tenants remain on the property if they try to shift those uses there.
That's the farm stand.
Correct.
Okay.
And then it's the physical characteristics of the property across the street that are more limiting, right, Patrice?
Yeah, the property across the street is two zones. It's RMUZ in the front, which really doesn't allow housing, but it's R2 in the back, and almost where that line is, the whole back half of that property is wetlands. So he's really just got the front part of it. I mean, if he included some commercial, and some of the things he's talked about is a commercial, like a mixed commercial with affordable housing, which that would be allowed. So I don't know. He's got a lot of ideas. I think he's okay. Just trying to feel out all the things he can do.
Okay.
But RMUZ, we usually don't put housing in. The R2 zone would. So, hey, Mike, just so you know, I'm just looking at TV. It says that they're not sure they have the numbers for the votes.
In the Senate?
Yeah, no. I think this is the House. They are not sure they have the numbers. The Democrats put in a provision that allows senators to sue the federal government for up to $500K for looking at phone records or something. I don't know what's going on, but I guess it's a little chaotic.
Huh.
So I don't know if there has been a vote.
This is in Hartford, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Come on. You have your hand raised?
Yes. So, Mike, just to try to wrap my head around what you talked about here. So that bill, I believe you mentioned was 5002. Is there anything from what you have seen as you kind of, you know, made your first couple passes through the bill itself that outlays what percentage, say if there was an improved housing growth plan, what percentage of any particular affordable housing development would be covered by a grant if a grant was actually offered to us? Say if it was like one bedroom, is there a certain percent? If there are two bedrooms, is there another certain percent? Is there anything in the text that describes that type of information?
I don't see anything there. I saw something that as far as the carrot, they did, there is language which requires the Department of Housing to develop a grant program which would support housing authorities' expansion of middle housing availability in municipalities of under 50,000 people. They're creating an open choice housing voucher program, and then there's some grants to COGS. But I think, yeah, not a lot of stuff that locally on the construction side. The other thing that they're going to, I think, push to is the other entity that was created, I guess, last year, which was started as MRDA and is now CMDA, was Municipal Redevelopment Authority, I think, and now it's the Connecticut Municipal Development Authority.
Right.
And so through that process, if you create a district that meets the criteria of their standard, it then opens up an ability for them to funnel a big pot of many millions of dollars into what they call transit-oriented development, but that can mean many different things dependent on the town, because obviously Bolton doesn't have a train station or you know, rapid bus transit, et cetera. So I think you'll probably see that play into that.
We cannot forget the fact that we do have a bus stop for city buses. Yeah, we are on the list, so we shan't forget about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, if the town were to create one of the, you know, a qualifying zone and actually have the Board of Selectmen affirmatively pass a resolution to participate in CMDA, you know, you could consider establishing the district around like the commuter lot, and then development in that area in theory could then be eligible for funding under CMDA. I don't know all the specifics and if that's something the town will be interested in, but that could be a way to get money to offset development costs for housing.
Going back to 1225 and 1230 Boston Turnpike, if there's a way to put housing in there, could we offer the developer any kind of support if he chooses to develop with housing?
Give him a tax break.
We can't. That would be something the select he'd have to go talk with the selectmen about.
But well, through these grants and everything, through these new incentives, is there anything that we can point out to him that he might be eligible for?
He could be. I
His
mean, I
cost.
don't know how when those kind of things would be going into effect, Mike. Do you know that? If this passes, and I'm sorry, so it passed the Senate, it's in the House now. They're yakking and they don't think they have enough votes.
Okay.
That's what I'm being told here. Anyway.
The
Anything.
document that I have doesn't have any, it doesn't have any effective dates just because
Right.
we don't have the final language, but you know, it I'm seeing, you know, 2026, 2027, so there would be some time, but the housing tax credits or the low income tax credits that a lot of developers tend to go for are often at the federal level. There's, you know, there's not a lot with the Department of Housing. I mean, there's some, you know, the Department of Housing through DECD, you know, you could a project could participate or could get funding through the Community Investment Fund, but Bolton's not an eligible community, so
Okay.
those funds couldn't come here.
And not only that, are they all still available? I know there's been a lot of cutbacks and things. Have said that been pulled back also?
CIF has not. They are in round 8 of 10, I believe. And that's all funded through DECD. So I think that there have not been any adjustments in that as far as I can tell.
Okay.
So it's typically a federal tax credits that they are trying to go for when it's a qualifying project. But yeah, locally, as I said, you know, it would be a tax stabilization or tax abatement that the town would really be up to the Board of Selectmen to offer.
My guess is if this particular person is going to look at some sort of 830G project, he's going to hire a lawyer and or a developer who knows what they're doing to do that.
Okay, good.
So it's a little more complicated than just, you know, your
Oh,
development for on their side.
yeah. Ellen King. We passed over residents forum and we've just finished staff reports. If you wanted to say anything, now is your opportunity.
Oh, no, thanks. I'm just listening.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Item number 5 is old business. Was there anything? And no new business either.
No.
Okay. So we're ongoing discussion, Bolton subdivision and zoning regulations, and you were hoping to get the revised signage possibly as a public hearing in January.
That would be if we can, that'd be great. I kind of just quickly wanted to go over what you did last time since Mike and I weren't here, which I've addressed in the packet that was left in front of you today. I also emailed that out, Kwan, if you got that email this afternoon. But if we can do that quickly, I think there was just a couple discussion items that you had left. Other than that, I made the changes that you guys had commented on.
Okay.
So if we're all together here on the first page, at the last meeting, you talked about, but made no changes to the purpose, section A. Same thing with section B. Same thing with section C. So I'm assuming we can renumber via codification and then this page is fine.
So on that first page, I have it printed out. So Anders, what would have been section A, which is now crossed out, that fourth bullet point, there is a period that's missing, just for consistency, because every other point has a period.
At the end of the sentence. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Thank you, Quan.
You're welcome.
Anything else?
on this page?
Okay. On the second page, there was discussion about C, prohibiting signs. And so you had left C all by yourself, the way it was. And so we're going to just leave it. I know you had some discussions about things, the 16 inches from the building wall, but it seems like you came to terms with how this is written. Did I get that right, listening to the tape? That would have been number seven there. I know we talk about it in the next item, in item A. And it sounded like you guys were okay with the way it was.
There was a lot of discussion, but I think we ended up with keeping it, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it said no changes to C is how it was.
The only thing I will say as I was looking through this, I just wanted to make sure we're not going to place an unburdened barrier. The one thing I thought about is, as we're actually getting towards the Christmas season, I had a thought about photonic projecting type of signage. So sometimes houses may have like some type of laser projection that would form some type of image or some type of form up against their own residence, not going into the street. I just want to make sure that we will not be causing any undue, you know, confusion with section C, with any of the, you know, terms that we have specified here.
Do we need to define a sign? I think that's more ornament, and we wouldn't interfere with that any more than we would with an inflatable Santa or a string of Christmas lights.
I mean, I think
just more of like a projection, you know, is like actually casting light, but it's not going away from the house. It would be going towards the house.
Yeah. I can't imagine that being within our purview. I mean, we might all have personal feelings about that kind of thing, but I don't think it's something that the town has to take up.
No.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing. I just wanted to make sure we weren't going to run into anything with that.
Okay. In item D, I don't know if you guys had done any changes. We had some questions regarding the permit under a primary attached sign where it says staff, and you know, do we want to leave it as staff? Should that be the CEO? Mike had mentioned that staff covers it in case the CEO is in there and somebody else has to do it. So I think we leave that as is. Is that okay?
Yes.
Okay. And then I think there was some discussion about the internal direct channel halo lighting of signs. So currently, Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but do we allow interior lit, or does everything have to be lit from the outside shining down?
No, I believe we have internal illumination in the
right channel. We do. Okay. All right. So if the commission is okay with that, then we can keep that. There had been some discussion about the very bright LED lights that line around a window in some of the vape shops and those kind of things. My recollection is you did not want to allow that type of lighting. Am I wrong about that or right?
I've tried to picture it because I don't go to vape shops.
Well, I mean, the liquor stores use them. Some places use them, and it's just basically they just start outlining the windows and the doors, and it's very bright. And it's a little bit distracting, but we had a discussion about it at a meeting, and I just.
Yeah, well, I remember the liquor stores like them having something like, you know, Bud Light, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly what I remember too. It was about like a Corona Light, you know, the beer or whatever, but small.
And neon and.
Yeah, no, this is when they actually take the huge store window and they just outline the whole thing, just the window with lights. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
We did have a discussion. I will. Fine day.
All right. Well, the holidees are coming up, so they might want to be a little festive.
That's not ornamentation, though. That's not what that is. That's something that goes on all year round. All right. So then I guess we're going to leave the... roof signs. That was the other thing. We don't currently allow them. Do we want to just remove the roof sign allowance or make it a prohibited sign?
I don't see why they can't have a roof sign.
You don't see why they cannot?
And I don't see why we would want to prohibit that.
Okay. Mike, you got any comment on the roof signs in your experience?
I think that they're in there because there were existing signs that the commission didn't want to make non-conforming.
Right. These are Tollens regulations, by the way. This is what we're working from. Okay.
Yeah.
But we don't currently allow, we don't have them. So, I mean, they're, but you're saying, Tom, that you don't have a problem if they wanted to put them. Is there a reason, Mike, why they wouldn't want them?
I think purely aesthetic. Do you like them or want them? But I don't think can't think of any other reason.
And we're talking about 1 square foot per linear foot of building frontage.
I would say since we don't allow them now, just remove it. And if it comes up later, fine. But I mean, right now you've got signage on the front of the buildings and all the other.
It's almost outdated that they put them up there.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Do we have any? And we have zero in town, even pre-existing ones, right?
That I know of, yeah.
Roof signs.
I can't recall any better.
We have a.
I have a question. Historically, has there ever been any concern about sight line interruptions with roof signs? Is that part of the history why the no roof signs were allowed?
Well, when they're up on the roof, it's kind of hard for them to interrupt.
Well, sometimes you may have some properties that may be elevated. So
And
I'm just wondering if that's part of the history or not. I don't know.
maybe if it were on a flat roof, but
Well, I think that's
on
what
a
it's
gabled
for.
roof, I don't think it would be a problem for a sightline because the roof would already be there.
What I'm getting is that roof signs weren't pretty much allowed because of the anesthetic appeal. Is that the only kind of driving factor?
Probably.
That we know of. Okay.
It's restricted to flat roofs, to buildings with flat roofs. I could see where some people may feel they need it because if they're behind another building and they have to keep all their signage low, aside from building something separate and apart from the building itself, they'd have a hard time being seen. Would that make sense? And as written, it can be at most 4 feet from the
Yeah,
roof.
it's already four feet.
I don't think that this. I think the way it's written, it's limited enough that it's not going to be a problem if we leave it in. That's my.
I think so too. I agree.
Yeah.
I also
Everybody
agree.
agree with that?
Yeah,
Yes.
it's already
All right.
written.
Right. So we will move on. Canopy signs, what did you decide on that? We currently don't allow them. I think your discussion was that. There's usually canopy signage on canopies, especially for gas stations. Do we want to allow this? The one that we do have was done through variance, and they gave them a variance to do it.
I think all the gas stations now are doing canopy signs, aren't they?
Yeah. I don't, it's not something I object to. So I would leave it in.
Anybody disagree?
No,
I don't hear any.
Okay, we'll leave them in. Moving on to detached signs. You had a change in the second item, which was the second freestanding sign. You changed from commission to staff, so that change has been made. I don't know if there was anything else there. That's all I saw on that one. Number three, other signs. You added, or I'm sorry, you removed, you wanted to have or industrial park a sign. Okay. For developments, I'm under unified side development, the first item. For developments which have been approved, designed, and designated as a business park or industrial park, and then take out the rest. I believe that's what I saw from your
Yeah,
comment.
that makes sense.
Okay. And then in directional device, there was no changes. In traffic control device, there were no changes. You wanted further discussion under the window signs.
Okay, we have not eliminated.
Window signs.
Yeah, so my question was discuss
Oh, this is where your LED
especially
lights.
those lights. And Mike's comment was he didn't think it should be allowed. And if you're going to allow it, then make them non-illuminated.
The LED lights should be non-illuminated. The
No,
web.
we have not illuminated Window signs.
Okay.
In other words, you'd delete the illuminated window signs.
So Bud Light wouldn't be lit up.
Wouldn't be lit up. He could have a Bud Light sign, just wouldn't be lit up.
How about an open or closed light sign?
Yeah.
It's in, when you're driving by, it's much better to see an open closed sign if it's illuminated than not.
Otherwise, you have to stop and get out of your car and go to the door, and there it is.
Or slow down and create problem in the traffic.
You could say window signs shall not be illuminated except for directional. And I don't know what you'd call open and closed. I don't know if you could consider that to be a directional sign or not, but
I don't know. Maybe I'm having a senior moment here, but somehow a liquor store without any lit signs in it just doesn't seem right.
Oh,
point taken.
one. Other than the open close.
It's your guys' call. Whatever you want to
Yeah,
do.
most of these things. I don't know, four square feet. I think we're putting a limitation on them of 4 square feet.
And you get one, right?
Yeah, and you get one, that's it, right?
So you want to leave that?
I think we
That
I
would
think we
allow for
can.
your open and close sign.
That's right. That's
It
right.
would allow for your whatever, yeah. Okay.
So your potentially hours of operation.
Yeah,
Could
anything you
up,
want to put in there.
light up. Okay. Under permanent signs in the residential zones.
I think if you want to say it, if you're
Say
going to
what?
scratch out that's going to scratch out the 10 feet of the building, you want to say located on the premises. So you'd also scratch within and.
Oh, okay.
I agree. I was about to bring that up. I think it's more concise, less speculative.
Okay. Yep. And the comment on this one was, is it appropriate to allow three signs at a residential business? You recommended offering a choice between a primary sign or a freestanding sign. You get one or the other. Is that where you came down on there? So right now it looks like you can have on the premises an approved home occupation. You can have 1 4-foot sign, and you could have a, that would be an announcement sign, a freestanding sign, and a, well, no, I don't know. I'm not sure what your comment was
I
then.
think that was the two, is that if there was a setback issue where they couldn't see a sign from the road, you could have an announcement sign closer to the road, but then you could have a directional sign or something in the back to show where to park, something or where the, enter here kind of thing.
Right. That's exactly what we talked about. One on the house or one on the building, one in the front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So right now you would be allowed an announcement sign, a wall sign, right? And a freestanding sign and a directional sign. This is in the residential zone, R and R2.
Does it depend on how far back property is?
Well, even if they just have a lot of bushes, you know, it might be hard to. So I think that the setback is just. They don't have to have that, but it's possible to have that. Right?
Well, where are you seeing the setback? It says on the premises. It doesn't really.
Well, the premises includes the building lot too, right?
Yeah. You just can't have it in the right of the town or state right away, but you can have it in the front of your lot. Yeah.
The only thing that I will mention is that this is written this way because in the Tallinn regs, the home occupation standards specifically allow for the announcement sign, which is they kind of point to in the description, on the premises for which an approved home occupation permit has been issued. So somebody that is running a home business or something would not also be eligible for the other signs in those residential districts.
So they'd only get a home they'd only get one sign, is what you're saying, Mike, right?
Right. A home occupation, you know, a tax accountant or a chiropractor or whatever, they get one sign, 4 square feet, because they're in a residential zone. The primary wall sign, freestanding sign, you know, those are meant for businesses that exist in a residential zone, you know, an existing business. But a house is only going to ever be eligible for the announcement sign. And I think this comes back to the discussion we had maybe two meetings ago, which is when you think about signage, the only thing that we are regulating is a sign that advertises, you know, the sale of goods and services, something that someone is making money off of. So we support the Boy Scouts is not a sign. Anything related to, as Quan was saying, holiday, decorations. We love the police, support our troops. Help
Miller.
People. None of that,
Your home sign, yeah.
None of that stuff qualifies for a sign. So you first have to decide if what you're thinking about in your head as you kind of work through these things even qualifies as signage. Because if it's not commercial speech, we can't regulate it. It doesn't fall under anything that we've written here because it is exempt.
So in Tallinn, they cannot have a sign for business like an accountant. They can't have like, you know, Tim Smith accountant on a larger sign, you know, by the road or by the entrance, and then have another sign in the back attached to the building with an arrow that says enter here. They cannot do that.
Right. And that is largely a function of the home occupation criteria in almost all cases, you know, no matter what the town is, unless it's a special permit type of thing, is by appointment only, which means your customers should know. You know, you're not going to do like a retail operation or, you know, just sort of a drive-by advertisement of something. Generally speaking, it's, you know, appointment only. Your customers know where they're headed, and so, you know, you're providing a little bit of professionalism by saying, hey, you get a sign so you can say here's the business or whatever that you exist, but it's not really meant to support the operation. It's not meant to really advertise. That's why we call it an announcement.
Okay. Right. And because of that, usually when a home occupation gets to be so big, the idea is that they want you to move into the business zone and out of your residential zone.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
So I don't know if there's a better way because this is in the residential zones. I don't know if there's a better way to say this based on what Mike just said, but
well, and the other thing, sorry, that I will say is the reason that we set it up this way is because we can't regulate content, right? So we can't say, you know, these types of businesses or, you know, these types of uses. We can't say retail uses. We can't talk about real estate signs or like anything that ties back to a regulation based upon the content or the person projecting the message. And so the only way to get away from that is to create criteria based upon the location of the sign, which we did by zone. So the reason we have this separation is because we can regulate the types of signs allowed in a residential zone versus the types of signs allowed in a commercial zone. We can't right. regulate who puts them up, which is why we tied the allowance for the announcement sign to the home occupation, because we can't have any regulation that talks about what someone's allowed to say on that sign. So we separated it by zone because that's really the only way to draw any distinction between the types of signage.
And yeah, give relief to the neighbors too.
Okay, I think maybe it would help if between announcement sign and the other four kinds of signs, we just put another title that says other permitted businesses. Because it's in a residential zone.
Mike, is the announcement sign specifically for home occupations and nothing else?
Right.
Okay. So could it say announcement sign, or could it say something like home occupations are allowed one sign, instead of saying this, located on the premises for which the approved home occupation permit has been issued, and leave it at that? Announcement sign, you could even say announcement sign for home occupations. And then the others, like Tom just said, you could say for other businesses in resident or pre-existing businesses in residential zones, or however you want to say it, for the other items.
Well, I mean, I think the problem you might run into is, what about the going forward, like, you know, pre-existing, I don't know, that may constrain.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
I'm just saying other permitted businesses, either because they're existing non-conforming businesses, or because there's some other kind of business that's permitted in a residential zone.
So you're trying to get away from the allowance in the residential zone, or you're just thinking it's a little bit unclear?
I think it's unclear.
I think it's unclear.
So I think if the only thing that applies to home occupations in this E section, it should just say home occupation.
And then all other
businesses in residential zones, the rest of them.
Or you can just say, you know, in all other zones or in other zones.
I think we're limiting the size because it's in the residential zone.
Right. Yeah.
The other thing that I think the freestanding sign or primary wall sign in residential zones gets to is ag and farm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, some of that they deal with mostly temporary signs, but, you know, you could have a bona fide business operating out of a farm or agricultural property that, you know, wants to put up a freestanding sign by the road or whatever, and they're located in a residential zone. Yeah, which is why the allowances are different, particularly with illumination and some of the other stuff.
All right, temporary signs.
So what do you want me to do with what we're doing? Do you want us to try and come up with a solution to this? The well, idea I, here is the first one is for home occupations and the other I, four here, are
here's
for
what, here's
else.
What I like.
All right.
Instead of saying announcement sign, say announcement sign for home occupations.
Okay.
And then all these other signs are under a heading, other permitted businesses.
Okay.
Like they said, which might be farms, it might be an existing non-conforming business, whatever it is.
Okay. All right, we'll try that. Okay. So there were no changes to the rest of this, and you guys left off. You did not discuss and start temporary signs. That's where you left off.
Right.
So I didn't really have any comments on the temporary signs. I don't know what you guys, this is sort of like almost like what we have for the most part. Is there anything you're opposed to?
The only one that I would highlight, because it is the one that I think is the most, I'm trying to think of a good adjective. I think it deviates most dramatically from the types of regulations you will see as far as temporary signs would be yard sign, which is towards the bottom of that table in that section. So that is the traditional, you know, yard sign that gets put up, you know, in someone's front yard for, you know, all kinds of different things during elections. Obviously, it's if they have
Exit.
Some working,
yard
yeah,
work.
Working on the house, whatever it is. So I think I mentioned this before in Tolland, they were extremely, extremely, extremely concerned about their ability to have a resident be able to put up a sign for each candidate on the slate in within any given election, local election. So
yeah,
they,
but that's political speech and it's not regulated.
They, we talked about that, and that, and I would agree with you. There was a concern that if certain positions, locally, state, etc., the person makes money off of the position. Let's say you're elected as, I don't know, something, and there's a salary associated with it, then you can make the argument that they earn money by the advertising, and so they wanted to go in this direction, so there is no limit to the quantity.
I don't know if that's, I mean, someone may bring up the issue, but we have a hard time finding people to run.
Yeah, well, I think so. The way we looked at it is, I mean, they agonized over this, and we have the limitation in there that the display cannot exceed a period of 60 days. So
yeah.
The idea was, this is not a problem that will become established and persist in perpetuity. If there's an issue, you know, we can adjust the regulations, we can figure out what the problem is, and these signs come and go every 60 days. So you're not going to have somebody put up 200 signs in their front yard and then say, I'm going to leave them there forever. So we decided to think less, and we kind of went with it. It has not been an issue since the regs have been adopted. Obviously, we went through just a campaign cycle. But that's the only one that I think really deviates substantially from what you would see in, you know, any town USA temporary sign regs.
I think the 60 days takes care of it too.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking. I haven't seen this. Okay. The maximum number is none.
Where is that?
It's right there.
That seasonal sign.
Yeah.
Right. There, you, so you're reading that to say it, you can have exactly none when it comes to yard signs. And it's interesting that that never came up, but you know,
Are
obviously
there
it's
other
written.
places you've said not applicable? In other words, there is no maximum.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Maybe it was what is it? I don't know what you call that, like a Freudian slip where we put none,
Yeah.
hoping people would read it and think they couldn't put any up. We can change that to, yeah, no
Today.
maximum or
So it's
whatever.
it, you've said NA and other previously.
Yeah.
For instance, on-premises traffic control structure, it says maximum number not applicable.
So those need to be changed
Yeah.
to just NA. Applicable for yard signs and for seasonal.
You want to make it not applicable? Is that what you want to do?
Yes,
Yeah.
it has the same meaning everywhere. A maximum does not apply.
So where it says none, it's not applicable.
Right.
Only two.
Okay, and so you are leaving the yard sign in the 60 days. You're going to leave that as it's written.
Yes.
Okay.
Do we have in our in Bolton Lakes, do we have a limit on yard signs right now? None. Okay.
All right. You're good with the rest of the banner, sidewalk signs, et cetera. We moving on to freestanding signs, or are you still reading the others?
Nope, I'm on freestanding.
Okay, so we have not updated this to our own
Yeah, I see that.
zones that we
Taubman Business
have.
Park,
Yeah.
Taubman Village.
We probably could combine this into R1, R2, and R3 and make those the residential zones and have the same height and everything in those. The GMUIZ, the RMUZ, and the GB, and make it business zones and have the NB on its own.
What's NB?
Neighborhood business. Okay.
Neighborhood business. So I think that would give us four categories: residential, the business, NB, and the industrial zone. Okay. And I
Yeah.
don't know if you want us to come up with or put in the current figures, and then we can look at that next time. Or do you want to do this now?
Yes. I think just put in the current figures and we could go to public hearing with that.
Okay.
Under H, other standards, where it says a freestanding and low profile sign, I would say a freestanding, comma, scratch and low profile sign. So it applies to one sign.
Okay.
So in other words, the street address would not count towards the like square footage of the total sign.
That's what it's saying.
Mike, can you describe a sign that would meet the number two there? An overhanging sign shall not project greater than 4 feet measured at right angles to the building to which the sign is attached.
I was thinking of a pub sign, you know, kind of thing where it comes out at right angles, right?
Yeah, I think
and
it's
it
like
has, you know,
the Green Man.
The Green Man Inn or something.
You have like a sign that you have like a covered canopy or covered walkway, you know, with the building, and the sign, like a blade sign, comes out sort of up overhead.
Okay.
Let me see.
Would there be something like that at Georgina's? I'm trying to think if there's any. Probably not.
But I think that old fashioned idea of having a bracket with a hanging sign, that would be this kind of sign, right?
Yeah, that sounds like the application. Right.
Okay, so we don't have any problem with that, do we?
Well, if we ever
No.
get quaint enough, we can have a lot of those.
And under sign lighting, I agree. We should just refer it to the outdoor lighting requirements.
Yeah, it would eliminate a lot of that. Are you good with that, Mike, with the regard to regulating it?
What do you mean? With the just
replacing
referring to
replacing sign lighting I with the current illumination. All signs shall meet the outdoor lighting requirements of 453.20 of our regs that are already existing.
Yeah, finally.
Same thing with J.
I think deferring to 450-18.13 construction and design would work. Because you're saying signs should be constructed such as wood or metals. Well, a lot of signs are made out of plastic or have plastic elements. So I think that professionally designed and constructed of weather resistant materials is good.
Okay. So we'll change this section to that.
Yeah. But I want to leave in the part of balloons, streamers, pennants, banners, or other device.
You want to leave that in?
I want to leave that in, especially those big floppy guys.
Very distracting.
They're annoying. Never mind distracting.
Do we care about the freestanding signs at number 5? You want to leave that in?
No, I think the fact that it has to be, strong, professionally designed, weather resistant, I think covers that. I mean, it's
the this is talking about having a durable base and landscaping around it.
Yeah.
No, take that out.
Yeah, it's okay. Then.
So you just want a freestanding sign with no kind of base or anything?
The ones that I've seen around town, I'm thinking particularly of Simonized.
Mm-hmm.
They're beautiful, but they're not like that. They're just it's just a sign.
Yeah, but it's very well done.
It's very well done.
Yeah.
So, I don't think we need this. We have. I would keep landscaping out of the sign regulations because we have landscaping, we have it, it's in other places.
Okay.
For coffee.
Okay. But just kind of like someone can't just put up a rinky dink sign.
Well, it has to be made of durable material and be competently done. So,
yeah. Okay. As long as it says that. Does it say that?
Yes, it says. It has to be professionally. That's our. That's what we are. That's the language that we're replacing it with.
Okay.
It says all signs shall be professionally designed and constructed of weather-resistant materials.
Okay.
And then we've got the sign maintenance section, which we definitely want to keep.
Yep.
And I like this. I like this. This ability to remove the signs, given notice.
Okay.
Mike, have you ever had to use that provision?
Never.
Okay.
I know Mansfield has had some issues with sign maintenance, and I think we actually built language into the regulations. They had a situation where a couple of business owners had, you know, an old garbage sign that they kept up because they wanted to protect their right, non-conforming right to maintain it. And meanwhile, you have this sign that just keeps looking worse and worse and worse. And so we included in their reg some language which basically allows them to, you know, put pen to paper and go to staff and say, hey, I got this sign. No one likes the way it looks. We all want to agree that this is how big it is, this is where it is, and this is what it looked like, so that a year or two or three or five or 10 from now, I can, you know, come back and put it up, and the town will memorialize what that looks like, so that in the interim, they can take the yucky sign down and no one looks at it, just for the purposes of it being preserved.
Right.
Well, there's a lot of emotion behind that kind of thing. That's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. But, you know, I guess if you've got some older stuff sitting up, you know, I know, I mean, it's not that uncommon. My grandfather had a building on the main street in the town I grew up in, and he's that sign, that freestanding sign with advertising his business existed in place for at least 25 years after he sold the building and didn't even have the business anymore. It stayed exactly in place because once you take it down, you can't put it back up.
Wow.
You're preserving your right to keep it that way.
I think the application requirements are reasonable.
And understandable, I'll add.
And then in the enforcement, you're just going to put in the correct regulation section.
The red ink there on under M, where you have making.
It should be making. The E is being taken out.
Okay, making. Thank you.
Yep.
Sorry, I missed that last part. What should be taken out under which section?
It's M, special permit criteria for signs. And it says
very first sentence.
Very first sentence.
Okay.
It's supposed to read making. So they're adding the ing and removing the e.
I see it.
But it's hard to see that the e is crossed out because the strike through is where the where it would
with
be in the letter
the
anyway.
Tilde, yeah.
You want to talk about N?
It only allows a 25% increase. I think that's a reasonable provision.
Okay. So I guess my question is, if you pass a regulation and the sign then becomes non-conforming, as long as it stays, it doesn't really need to come back for conformance for you. This is if you were replacing it. Is that how you understand it? I don't know why we would allow for a new sign to be 25% bigger, but.
I think that there was concerns about, you know, when you look at the allowable signage and the numbers in the table, that there could be a situation where, you know, somebody comes up and they had this, but, you know, then the business is closed and now they need to add that, or, you know, it was essentially trying to provide a carve out if in building in this extremely streamlined uniformity with the reg as it's currently drafted, where we don't have all this signage that's by business type and by user and, you know, real estate signs and community signs, etc. They just wanted to have an opportunity where someone could present their case and, you know, as a little bit of a carve out, again, not wanting to have a negative effect on any existing business.
And that would be for a new sign or a sign that existed?
A new sign.
Yeah. A new sign. That's what I'm saying.
Like a mini variance. Let's say somebody says, hey, you know, I have this building that's been in town for 250,000 years and it's 1,000 feet off the road and you allow me 16 square feet and you'd have to have binoculars to see a sign that's 16 square feet. So I want to increase my signage. Or, you know, I have an extremely, you know, large right away in front of my property. And so I've got to have my sign really far off the road. And so I need an extra 25 or, you know, I think there's some other limitations. Let me go back to,
what if someone had made a mistake? What if the first sign they put up was actually smaller than was allowable, and they now they want to increase it to the full amount? Would that be considered under this, or would it still be under?
No,
the,
you can go up to the full
square
amount.
Feet? Yeah,
you can always go up to the full amount. There's no
okay.
problem with that. The approval of such requests will not result in the creation of any new or expansion of any existing nonconformities.
The other thing that could occur, I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but I know I dealt a lot with this in Newington, because there were buildings that fronted the Berlin Turnpike, but you entered from the side that was on the opposite sort of part of the property. And so they effectively had signage that they wanted to put on three or potentially four sides of the building, because you had a Berlin Turnpike frontage, a parking lot frontage, and then a building entrance. And so you could have a situation perhaps where somebody has their primary wall sign and then the secondary wall signs are not. So the primary wall signs are allowed by business. The secondary are allowed based upon common entrance. And so you could have a situation where somebody has a really uniquely designed building or a multi-tenant building, and they need an extra wall sign somewhere. And so they need some additional square footage. You know, we rather than imagine sort of the universe of problems or worry about did we capture everybody, we built this in as a sort of that pressure relief valve. They have never used it. No one has asked about it, but they wanted to have it in there just in case.
All right, so what does the commission think about that?
I think leave it in
Okay.
and we'll see what happens at the public hearing.
Okay.
Okay, so I think we've done the work on this that we're going to,
What do you
and
want
it
to
will.
do with the enforcement section? You said you had a comment on that, Tom.
The last ones.
Just the comments that were already in there, changing Talon to Bolton and getting the sections regulation sections right.
Okay. So what's it says enforcement of section in this particular is 19-2F. What are they enforcing? It is the
Temporary signage.
temporary stuff, right? Okay. Okay. Right. I'll do a draft. Do you want it with to see it without all the one with the changes and then one without all the changes? So what it would look like completely for the next meeting?
Correct.
Then
Both.
we'll do a quick review and then maybe get it going to CROG and all the we have to go through for a regulation change.
Yes.
Okay. Right.
And let's see, I think it's late enough that we don't want to go on to the table of uses. Was there any correspondence?
I believe there was. It's attached to the back of your packet there. It was
Oh, yes.
the Connecticut Federation
Yeah.
planning. Can you read it so Cassie can just stick it in the title?
Connecticut Federation of Planning and Zoning Agencies quarterly newsletter.
There we go.
I have a copy. Thank you.
Okay. Sorry.
I'm prepared.
Just call people's attention to the workshops.
Right.
The
We'll discuss this at the next meeting, but for new commissioners, there'll have to be some training as well.
Diane, you're Jim Crappie tonight.
I say no.
I second the motion.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Hearing none. Meeting adjourn is adjourned at 8:54 p.m.
Tom Robbins, thank you very much
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
for your service. Please don't be a stranger.
Won't.
All right. And Diane, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure too. Thank
All
you.
right. We'll see you
Thanks,
guys
Bob. Tom. Thanks, Diane.
the rest of you next month.
Take care, everybody.
Yeah.
And Diane brought her green book. I'm going to leave
Yeah.
it on your desk.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Tom, if you have one and you wouldn't mind dropping it off at some point in the future, that'd be great.
I'll swing it by.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.